some internal testimony here, and then we'll go online. See, Nona Johnson is not here yet. For those of you who see Nona, we have an outstanding question about Vince Lombardi on a lighter note when she shows up, so we will stop the proceedings and ask her what that means, which we're in violation of today. Mr. Lombardi's probably rolling over his grave. With that, we have people prepared in the audience to testify on Senate Bill 40. Please, Paul, come forward. And see, Ms. Kathleen Hoffman from Cusquim Corporation.
Yes.
Would you state your name and your affiliation, please?
My name is Kathleen Hoffman. I serve as a board of director for the Cusquim Corporation.
Yeah, speak up just a little bit.
My name is Kathleen Hoffman. I serve as a board of director for the Cusquim Corporation.
Good. Thank you for joining us today. And if you would proceed.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman Huggins and members of the committee. Again, my name is Kathleen Hoffman. I serve on the Cusquim Corporation, of which we are private surface land owners of the area of the Donald Creek Mine Project. We strongly support the development of the mine, and our number one goal is to see our shareholders get jobs and benefit from the mine. The first point I want to make is that although we have made it clear we are ready to meet, the initiators of this bill, of this legislation, still have not met with us to discuss legislation and make their intentions known to us. The second point is that we are concerned about the makeup of the board of this proposed authority. There is no guarantee that we will be represented on the board, and if we understand the Attorney General correctly from your last hearing, the appointments would have to be made statewide. We would prefer to pursue the possibility of a borough with elected representation from the region. To that end, we have met with local boundary commission and will be holding a Cusquim summit on borough formation in the middle of Cusquim this spring, and also to provide local input from our shareholders in the region. We appreciated the testimony of the Department of Commerce and Community Development at your last hearing that this would be their preference also. We also do not understand the necessity of this legislation. It is our understanding, according to the Alaska Department of Transportation, that Placer Dome is intending to put the port and the road as private development, not using public financing.
Kathleen, we need to hold up just a second. We have an outstanding question, and the person with the answer just walked in. Nona, Mr. Vince Lombardi.
Oh, we'll have an explanation for you.
Okay, go ahead. We're waiting. Everybody's breathlessly.
I have to say the number one rule was, I don't think you broke a rule last week, but it was definitely a good show for an individual commitment to group effort that you're testifying on in a bill. You might have broke one, but you upheld another, so it washes out, and you're okay.
Okay, for further clarification, it's a clock-watching mechanism. Mr. Lombardi's rule was that show up 5 minutes early, and you won't be late. That is Mr. Lombardi's rule. Thank you very much. Please, Kathleen.
Okay. Going on, we have not been asked by Placer Dome to support this legislation. We have also met with ADA, and they've told us that they could provide financing for the mine as they did with Red Dog if they were requested to do so. We would like to hear specifically what then would be financed by the authority that could not be done by ADA. While we do not support the bill at this time, we would like to suggest some specific amendments. First would be an amendment which would prohibit the authority from receiving land which has been condemned by the state of Alaska. Otherwise, we feel we could lose control of our private land in this area. Secondly, we think that if legislation moves forward, it should include an amendment which would turn over operations of the authority to an organized borough in this area when it is formed. The Cusquim Corporation is ready to work in a positive way with anyone to help make this mine happen. We need to be involved from the beginning. And that's the position from the Cusquim Corporation.
Senator Calvary?
Yes. You understand the governor we can't, an amendment to who is on the board, that's the governor's choice of that, and there's nothing we can do about that. And you have written testimony, if we could have...
I think we have that, Senator Cowdery.
Do we have it?
Yes.
I'd like to get a copy. So, as we said, we're just listening to the testimony today and appreciate your thoughts on it. And I understand Placer Dome is neutral on this, and that, in fact, they don't want to get into a fight, and they think that they got more testing to do, and it could employ up to 1,000, maybe, people or more, and the possible future testing, although now they think they have about 11.5 million ounces, it could go as high as 25 million ounces. So, anyway, that's downstream, but I appreciate your testimony.
If you would, please, are there other questions from members? Kathleen, I have a couple of questions for you. You mentioned condemned lands. Could you describe the nature of condemned lands?
Mr. Chairman, Paul Foose for the record. Condemned land is land when the state of Alaska comes in and said, we're building a road here and we're seizing your land by eminent domain. And you can't stop the state from doing it. They have to compensate you for it. You can argue over the value they're offering you, but you can't stop them. And the concern is that the state could condemn land and grant it to the authority as a way of getting around the private landowners in the area. So currently, the authority does not have the power of eminent domain, but they could ask the state to do it for them and transfer the land to them. That's the concern.
Secretary.
If you went at this all through a borough government, they'd have the same power, wouldn't they?
They would have the power, but it would be a locally elected representative body of the people from the area. That's the difference.
Okay, but fair market value is fair market value. If the land's to be taken, the same price is going to be paid.
That's correct.
Kathleen, and you mentioned borough formation. In your estimation, as representative of a corporation, could you characterize how potentially possible that is in a timeline? That just, we're not holding to anything, just your best guess. This is, we'll put it down as a guess.
Well, in sort of questioning the matter of how boroughs and or the timeline of the mine, so to speak, the only comparison that I have to add is just sort of the similarity of Red Dog Mine and when they had to form, you know, at the timing wise with the borough up north. So, and you know, the reality is we from the Kuskokwim Corporation board are quite concerned about, of course, the development of the mine, but then also, in addition, we know that generally the boroughization and all that in lieu of, you know, regarding taxes specifically come together at one time. So we want to make sure that we're taking the best interest of our shareholders.
And Mr. Chairman, I might add another driving force for consideration of it is that what's happening all over the state is nearby boroughs are reaching out to grab mining properties. And, you know, we're seeing it in Fairbanks with the Pogo mine and elsewhere in the state. So that's another driving concern that even if this Port Authority didn't go through, some other neighboring borough would come in and try to grab the mine. So that's a driving force for consideration of borough in the region.
Kathleen, I can only speak for myself, but I believe in my conversation with a sponsor, Senator Cowdery, that one of the main intents of bringing this forward and for us to hear it as a committee, and my intent, is that this is another kickoff in being able to make this happen. So, you know, my challenge to you and all other players that are listening or that have testified, and Mr. Foose in this case, is that, you know, we have to get on with phase 1, 2, 3, and 4, ever how many it takes, and get beyond, you know, our testimony factor and start bringing parties together and understand what the differences are and figure out how to set those aside to make it happen. Because, I mean, I don't have to, I'm not lecturing you, I'm just trying to tell you that our intent, I recognize the value to the region
And it would be a shame for us, for whatever reason, that we fail to capitalize on the potential. And Mr. Foos knows that, I mean, somebody will capitalize on it. And it's just a matter of whether we do that from an omnipotent point of view of bringing all parties together and putting our differences aside the best we can, and not compress the timeline to any major degree, but in a realistic time frame that will meet the needs of the developer, the mine in this case. But this is bigger than the mine. This is about the future of the area there, and you know, living on the river, what it means transportation-wise. So we want to be part of the solution, and we just ask everybody to come to the table with that mindset. And that is pretty simple. Senator Theriault.
Thank you. Your comment, while we do not support the bill at this time, is in your testimony today, but the letter that was sent last year, Costco Incorporation is in support of the Interior Rivers Port Authority. The Interior Rivers Port Authority, an option that would provide a structure which could help represent the major landowners and economic development organizations. The regional transportation and energy infrastructure would help lead the region in self-sufficiency. The concept of the regional port authority could be a beginning of providing this regional focus. So what's the difference between last year and this year? Last year's bill was more expansive. This year's bill is tailored. Why the support last year and no support this year?
I might be in a position to address that, since I did work on that with Representative Morgan last year. This bill is not less expansive. It's more expansive in terms of the area. Last year it was considered as part of the people in the area who lived there. Now the boundaries have expanded completely down to the mouth of the ocean, and that's one of the biggest issues and frankly one of the concerns about the makeup of the board, and I think they've been pretty upfront about that. It also went a little bit north into the area, which was similar mining, the McGrath area, but a village is kind of a similar size and similar kind of economic makeup. So I think that's why they felt a little bit more comfortable with it. And I think really, if as you say, Mr. Chairman, people want to see it move forward, they could know what really specific infrastructure is meant to be financed by this and how it all fits in. A lot of this could be facilitated if the initiators of the legislation would just sit down and meet with the people who live there. Mm-hmm. That's all we're asking.
Right.
It's not too much.
Mr. Chairman, just follow up on the comparison to last year's bill, because Representative Morgan was so interested in Donovan Creek in particular, it did cover that area, didn't it?
It did cover that area, and at the time, but another difference is that I think is pretty substantial. At that time, Placer Dome did not have its development plans in place. Since then, they have determined that they do not want to use public financing for the project because of the effect it would have on their EIS. And it's all in the letter that DOT wrote. And we also provided a letter to the committee. I think you have it in your packet, which quotes pretty extensively from DOT. This isn't Placer Dome speaking, but DOT completely pulled out of the project because Placer Dome told them they want to do it all as one EIS, as a private development. Otherwise, they're going to get all snarled up time-wise. And they feel that they also said that the cost of the port and the road are not prohibitive to developing the mine, and that they would even pre-position equipment there in advance of the EIS being granted. So the speed of doing it meant more to them than the 2 or 3 percentage points of tax-exempt financing. And that's what DOT said specifically in their letter. So that's why the people are asking, what is specifically meant to be financed by the authority there that Placer Dome isn't going to do privately or ADA could do? And I think that's a legitimate question, and that's why it was stated pretty openly like that, and hoping to get an answer.
Is there a copy of a DOT letter in here? Is it an issue that if the state builds the road, then you have to meet a certain threshold? If the state builds the road, you might have to some extra hurdles. But if the state is just provides conduit financing, that in and of itself triggers the heightened EIS?
It does, and it also triggers the Davis-Bacon wages. And it also triggers the issue of doing the entire project as one as one under one EIS, the mine and the road and the port, rather than looking at them as separate projects. And again, I think you might ask that directly to Placer Dome, where we're not speaking for them, of course. I'm just quoting directly out of the DOT letter. And I believe that that's been turned over to the committee. You've got it right there, and you can see the whole thing in the DOT letter there of their, it was their report out, and they, and because of that, they said that they're withdrawing and completely closing down the project as a DOT project.
Mr. Chairman, one last question. The issue of the local area considering the formation of a borough, well, there might be some talk of doing that. That's a long way from actually implementing it. And so we've got this project that wants to move forward, and if we're being asked, well, trust us, we'll take steps on the local level to help the project move forward, and we're only here for 4 months, so we either have to know whether there's something there to take that leap of faith or not. So I'm not sure at this point that there's enough there to, for the legislature to trust that that locally is going to be moved forward.
You could be correct about that. And they don't want to put themselves in a position of assuming for all the people out there, which is kind of one of the concerns about this legislation, and do the same thing. So that's where they're holding the summit. But that's also why the specific, if you'd consider amendment, which would say if a borough is formed out there, it'll take over the operations of the Port Authority when it's formed. That would provide some consolation to the local people and maybe create an incentive for them also.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other question from committee members? Kathleen, let me ask you this. If let's make the assumption that that we can get some representation from this committee this summer to come someplace near the site to sit down and talk about the issues. All right, so let's make that assumption sometime in the summer. With that, do you think it's a reasonable expectation then that a regional planning group could start to be formed to come together so that we didn't start at ground zero when we came to the site to start talking about the issue? Now, you've asked some questions, and I'm not promising you definitive answers for any of your questions, and we will visit on that over time, but to the best of our ability. But the point being of the chair is that this is a project that's important to you. You know that. I know that. Okay, so the question is, how do we make it happen? All right, so I, as the chair, I'm committing, and I think Senator Cowdery, the sponsor, and others, to go out on site to be part of the solution. But in the same token, we need the, you know, little planning group to start coming together so that we can identify, you know, what we agree on, what we disagree on, and maybe a little bit of phasing, understanding that a lot of blanks about time factors of the phasing of that. Would that, from your corporation's perspective, would that be beneficial?
Absolutely. And I think with that said, in addition to what we've already done as a board and how we strongly feel that, you know, we've put the message out there. We've tried real hard to communicate. You know, we're really open to that. And the bottom line is, you know, we're looking out, you know, for our shareholders in the best interest of our corporation.
Right.
And that's the stance we're taking.
And I commend you for portraying the attitude of ownership. I mean, that's what we all are looking for, is for people to take ownership and responsibility and initiative, because that's how we get ahead in life, and that's about the community. So with that, are there any other points that you have or things that might have come to mind? Okay, thanks, Paul. Thank you very much, Kathleen. Appreciate your coming. Senator Kukesh has joined us, let the record show. Thank you. Did you have any questions?
No.
Okay, good. Are there other personnel in the audience that today would prefer to make some testimony or comment? Okay, with that, we have at least three people in Bethel LIO that are prepared and waiting to testify on Senate Bill 40. Is that correct? Beverly Hoffman?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Beverly. Stand by 1 second. Anna Hoffman?
I am here.
Is it Anna or Anna?
It's Anna.
Anna. Sorry, Anna. And Eric
Eric Middlebrook?
I'm here.
Okay. Are there any other people there that wish to testify?
Dario Nadi.
Say that one more time, please.
Dario, D-A-R-I-O, Nadi, N-O-T-T-I.
All right, good, Dario. Okay, so at this point in time, we have four people to testify. We will get your testimony in 2 days. So with that, Beverly, would you please state your full name and any affiliation you might have?
Thank you. My name is Beverly Hoffman. I represent myself here. I'm a lifelong resident of this area. I'm also a shareholder of Chalista Bethlehem Corporation, and I own my own business, Cuscoco Wilderness Adventures.
Okay, Beverly, if you would share with us your thoughts on Senate Bill 40.
Well, I have been here for the last several weeks hoping to get this opportunity. Senators, I'm very concerned with Senate Bill 40, which creates the Cuscoco Port Authority. And I heard last week Michael Black gave testimony that it's a very complicated piece of legislation. And I feel that is one of my concerns with the language in the bill. I feel that there is a lot of authority and power given to this Port Authority without local considerations. I'm concerned that this bill is driven by the need to develop Donlin's Creek without consideration of environmental and social impact and the impact it would have on our fish and our wildlife. I want to know exactly what power the Port Authority would have in land acquisitions, taxation, collection of fees of people in the on the Delta. I want to also know if they would have the authority to build infrastructure such as coal-fired power plants and natural gas lines without local input. I just have so many concerns of questions that I am in opposition of this bill. It's my understanding that Chalista lobbyist Joe Hayes asked that this bill be introduced by Senator Cowdery, and I'm concerned about Chalista's desires behind this bill. And as a lifelong resident and a shareholder, I just wanted to express my concerns that I feel like it's being, that there's an attempt to railroad it through, and I just wanted to come out and provide my input. Thank you.
Yes, Beverly. Senator Cowdery has a question for you.
Yeah. We're not trying to railroad anything through, and in fact, I don't know if any relation to you, but Senator Hoffman is a co-sponsor of this legislation also. And so anyway, I've talked to him. He's not in Juneau at this time, but we're trying to get everybody. That's the purpose of these hearings, to hear all sides to make a better bill out of this. So, and if you have your comments written down, I'd appreciate if you'd fax them to us, and we'll try to answer you in writing.
You were breaking up, but yes, I do have written comments, and I will make sure that facts, and we come from a big family and have great respect for my cousin, the senator, but I also have my own view. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got a cousin like that, too.
Beverly, Senator Huggins here. Number one, we appreciate your spirit. Number two, you asked some good questions which deserve answers. Now, let me tell you that I think the best answers will come by a spirit of cooperation where we work together. And hopefully you heard me when we were talking to Kathleen, who previously testified, about pulling together a planning group, a regional planning group, and then, you know, some representatives from this committee at a minimum come out to your site and take that into phase two, so that we can answer these questions together, and we can bring forward other questions so that we start to unmuddy the waters. Equally important that we develop some sense of growing trust, and we have objectives that meets the needs of the local community and we can move forward with. Would you buy into that?
I guess that would mean that you would not go forth with this Senate bill until such meetings have taken place. Is that correct? Is that what I understand?
I can't speak for the entire committee. Let me just tell you the chair's intent is that we are hearing this bill to be able to long range, be able to develop a port authority that will enhance the local region developmentally, and hopefully over time that will mean income, jobs, and all that goes along with that. I see this as a long-term project, not a near-term, short-term project. So the answer to your question, I think, is yes, but I can't answer for the entire committee. Is that adequate?
Well, I really am in opposition to this bill and the language, and I'm very nervous about it because, you know, I really, and I'm speaking as an individual, I really love my life out here and the way that I live, and I worry in the development of this Port Authority that, in the language, as I read it, there's just so much concern that it would jeopardize a life that I have lived for more than half a century that I really, really enjoy. And, you know, and while I'm there, I just wanted to say last week I was really taken aback by, and so it makes me happy that you guys are talking about coming out here, because one of the senators made a comment that we don't understand English very well and that we live in our own little world out here. And I was really taken aback and would like for you to come out here so that you can see that we do have a wonderful world out here, but we're very tuned into what's going on there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Beverly. And we owe you some answers, and we will get those answers to you over time, but I would prefer it come through your community answering that as we go through a process that brings these questions forward and we can work through cooperatively, because we do need to earn each and everyone's trust so that as we go forward, it makes sense and people begin to accept it. And we just ask you to work with us in a positive nature.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Anna?
Yes.
Please, if you would state your full name and your affiliation, please, and give us your testimony.
My full name is Anastasia Hoffman. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Bethel Native Corporation.
Yeah, go ahead, Anna.
Okay. BNC is the sixth largest village corporation in the state of Alaska, and it is the largest corporation in the Kuskokwim region. BNC is headquartered in Bethel, and there are approximately 2,000 BNC shareholders. BNC is a substantial private landowner and is financially invested in the region, and we are very concerned about Senate Bill 40. First, BNC feels that SB 40 must have language to recognize current private land ownership within the proposed operating area. Private landowners need assurance that their land is not in jeopardy and the Port Authority will not interfere with independent control and use of the private land. The bill must specify the jurisdiction of the Port Authority strictly to port-related functions. BNC feels the Board of Directors for the Port Authority should consist of individuals to be selected from citizens living within the communities affected. BNC does not agree with the language in the bill naming specific organizations designated to be on the board, since many key entities are not included. BNC asks that meetings of the board shall be held within the affected communities. BNC questions the amount of land proposed for the operating area. There is no explanation or justification to impose authority over such a large radius of land. In researching other areas around the state with port-related functions, the governing authorities, advisory boards, enterprise funds, or port authorities do not manage such substantial areas. BNC does not support the proposed operating area as presented. BNC opposes the collection of rates, fees, rents, and other charges for the execution of duties, since the proposed duties are not limited to port-related functions. The statement that the Port Authority is to improve, establish, and develop facilities and operations to provide transportation, energy, regional waste disposal, and other infrastructure services and economic development in the operating area of the authority is so general that every entity within the operating area will be assessed a fee whether they are utilizing port-specific services or not. To this, the legislature should be reminded that the majority of the villages located within the proposed operating area are severely under-budgeted and will not have the means to pay any additional fees, rents, or other charges imposed by SB 40. Finally, BNC does not see the need for the Port Authority as presented and does not support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Questions, Ivana?
Are you supportive of the development of the mine, of the Donna Creek mine?
Yes, they have concerns about the development of the mine as well. Some of the concerns stated by board members is how, because BNC is located downriver of the mine, how any pollution or development up there will affect the fish and wildlife that many of the shareholders depend on.
Thank you. Do you have your testimony in writing?
I do, and I will provide that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Anna, question for you. Reference the formation of a borough. As a CEO, does your corporation support borough formation?
I am the COO, and we are in opposition to the formation of the borough at this time that the board stands.
I'm sorry, you're the COO, and you say that you are against formation of a borough.
Yes, that's the board's feeling.
Right. In the mechanics of, in some shape, do you support a port authority, the essence of a port authority and what it represents?
Well, I would like to learn more about the other options than what is presented in this bill, such as the enterprise board, or the advisory boards that are available in other communities like Valdez. So I would want to explore other options.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have a question. One of the things I heard you say was that you were concerned about where this where these meetings would take place. I thought that's something you said early on in your testimony. And I was just looking through the bill, and I see that the bill requires that the board hold at least 4 regular meetings a year, but it doesn't mandate where these meetings take place. Would you be more in support of the bill if you knew the meetings were going to take place somewhere in the affected area?
Right, that's the language that we're proposing.
Thank you. And can I just ask the sponsor whether there's any reason not to have the meetings in Bethel or somewhere on the river?
I have no.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a worthy goal.
Yeah. Maybe I can put that forward as a conceptual amendment to work out the language later, but just some requirement that if they're going to have meetings, they don't have them in Anchorage, they don't have them in Seattle, they have them out in.
Okay.
Thank you.
On another question for you. When you look at the timeline in your mind, Port Authority and some of the requirements that would be in place, would you and your corporation be prepared to be part of a planning study group to carry this initiative forward?
I think to carry this initiative forward, that language I think is a little bit strong, but we would be interested in participating in any local hearings or information gathering that the Senate would like to engage in to do more to research this bill. But I couldn't say that we would be supporting this initiative to move forward.
Well, let me put it another way. We're in Juneau. That's unfortunate for having a conversation like this, but the local people, the local organizations, the local communities have concerns about local control. To do that, we have to bring all those groups and individuals together that we talked about. so locally you can discuss some of these issues so we can start deciding on what we agree on and what we disagree on. And then we have committed that at least some of this committee will have an objective of coming out on site this summer to have a phase two discussion of that. But we need to start working on at least some resolution and some points of agreement, then others that are disagreements that, to be worked out so that we can start moving the initiative forward, at least in the conversational formative stage. Are you willing to commit your organization to that?
If there are hearings, we will participate. If there are local organizations that get together regarding this bill, we will be at the table. I have a question to you about your thing coming out this summer. If the effective date is July 1 for this bill to take place, I'm wondering when in the summer you're anticipating coming out here.
Well, I would ask you to disregard the effective date. That's just for conversation's sake at this point in time.
So that will not be the effective date that will be amended from the bill?
Well, I can't speak for the committee, but myself, I view this as a long-term project that we're working on. But I, in the sense of working on this, I would ask you to think about a long-term project in any event. Anna, thank you very much. I appreciate your representation of your organization. Eric Middlebrook? Eric?
I'm here.
Yeah, would you please state... Yeah, state your full name, affiliation, and would you please send us a copy of your testimony in writing?
My full name is Eric Middlebrook. I'm no affiliation, but self-employed. Yeah, I'll give my testimony free of scribbles. But I can send you what I got.
I'm sorry, Eric, you came in garbled. Eric, excuse me, you came in garbled. Can you say again that last part?
Oh, a copy of my testimony is pretty scribbled, and I can send you, try to send you what I got.
Okay, good. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I have a lot of problems with the Port Authority the way it's proposed. One is that with the size and the scope of it, it just seems like it's coming too fast, and for most of us in this area, we really haven't had time to settle on exactly what it means in all its different directions. One of the biggest problems I have with the bill is that we are basically it has the potential for us to be unrepresented on the authority. Even though the bill says that the Customs Club Transportation, the Customs Club Corporation can, and other entities can submit nominations, there's nothing in there that says that the governor has to choose from those nominations, and it says that the nominations for seven of the members of the board will be from private entities that have a presence here. So it's possible that all seven of those appointed members could be like from Placer Dome or Chilester or Crowley, represented by people who don't even reside here or in the state. It just has to be a director or employee of that company. So at the minimum, anything with this kind of authority, I feel it would have to be people that were selected and elected by the people of this region. What I'm worried about is a cabal of business people that just have their way with development out here. There's no section on the limitations of the power of this authority. Other authorities in the state do have clear limitations on their power. I'm particularly concerned with eminent domain. Somebody from the Cusco Corporation mentioned condemned lands. That's a big concern. Another problem I have is that the authority would have the power to enter into agreements concerning waste disposal. Placer Dome in particular, I think that mine should be 100% responsible for handling their own waste. I don't want to see any public money going into the handling of the waste or any public agency or authority taking responsibility or liability of the mine's waste. I don't want to see them set up a dump and then have the waste from the mine come under the responsibility of an authority. That's a concern of mine. and leading some people have mentioned boroughs to for the authority to be under the jurisdiction of a borough. If the authority is responsible for waste and runs dumps, then I can see that liability being transferred to a borough. So I have a problem with a borough being formed because a borough has the power to tax individuals, and I definitely don't want to ever see a tax personally to cover those sort of things. The way the bill is written right now, with the area that it covers, the Port Authority, the area that the Port Authority covers, it seems like it's set up to be a wish list for Placer Dome and that construction. And it's a way, an end run around local entities, governments, and landholders. You know, it's a way to just develop for unchecked development in this area in the interests of Donlin Creek. As a way to funnel public monies to private enterprises, as a way to relieve the enterprises of liabilities. And those are some big concerns. I'm not, personally, if you ask me, I'm not anti-development, but I do not want to see development in this matter, in the matter of the Port Authority. That's basically it. Thank you.
Okay, quick questions for Eric?
Yes.
Eric, I have a question for you. On the formation of a borough, I mean, I understand your sentiment on taxes, and I quite frankly share those with you. I guess my knee-jerk out of that was, be careful who you elect. But beyond taxes, what's your stance on a borough?
I'm against it until I can see a definite need for a borough here. I don't see any reason to form one. Just the basic shell of a borough costs money that has to be paid for somehow. So I'm willing to live with less services than and less government than to pay for the cost of running a borough.
Secretary,
Mr. Chairman, now you see my, not suspicion, but when there's a suggestion that, oh, trust us, we're going to do this through a borough. You know, anytime there's discussion of borough, there's people quickly line up on different sides and, you know, dig their heels in. So it's easier said than done.
Yeah, Eric, Senator Huggins again. My challenge to you and your neighbors is that, you know, it's sort of simple. In the respect of, there's some opportunities that are showing their head right above water level. And the question is how we come to grips with that, whether we want to just sink it or whether we want to look at what it might bring and be willing to come to the table and have a conversation about it and look for solutions. And that, I would ask you to think about it in that vein and let's see what happens.
Yeah, well, the Port Authority bill as it's written would leave us lost. That's not much of a solution for the people of Bethel, as I see it. You know, we want to have a handle on the development there, and we don't want to be stuck with any liabilities.
Right, but here's my second challenge to you. Under the deed of no good deed goes unpunished, think of this just as a concept that represents the future and the growth and jobs and everything that goes along with that for the community. So with that, I'm sorry, Eric, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, you know, jobs are a good thing, but there is, I do believe there is such a thing as paying too high of a price for that job. And, you know, pollution is a big concern, waste are a big concern, and, you know, having to pay for projects that benefit the profits of another company. Those are also things, and sometimes that price can be higher than what I feel I want to pay.
Right.
And with something like the Port Authority as proposed, I feel that it can get out of hand without any local control or any handle on those things getting out of control.
Right. So my final comment, and then we'll move on, Eric, is that, well, our challenge is to figure out what is the right price. So let's work on what is the right price, and we'll all be happy. Maybe even a discount price.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much, Eric. Dario, Naughty? Naughty?
Right here. I'm representing myself. I'm a Calista shareholder and a Kuskokwim Corporation member and a Georgetown member also. And Georgetown had a good population back when I did Iditarod was a big mining district, but they all left to go to the Red Devil mine. So there's not much there, and Georgetown has potential if Donlin Creek is developed. But I do have some questions about this authority. And my first is page 2, line 18. Eric just mentioned it a little bit, and that's, Anna, I think, mentioned it also, and that's the waste disposal. I worry that that authorization for waste disposal could be used for toxic waste, such as could come from a tailing pile. And I believe that the owners of the mine should be responsible for it rather than an authority. Both Calista and Placer Dome have a history of leaving others responsible for Calista with Wave left all the villagers responsible with a large debt. And Placer Dome on the island of Marinduque in the Philippines, they were the managing partner of a copper mine, and when the copper ran out, they sold their assets to a corporation in the Cayman Islands. And then since that corporation had no assets other than, or had more liabilities than assets, they left the people of the Philippines responsible. And this authority, if they handled waste, could end up leaving all the people who have to receive freight within its area responsible. Every time I bring a gallon of stove oil for my house across the dock, it costs money to pay for a tailing pile that's up at the mine, or a barge load of lumber, or you know, a house, or a new truck, or whatever. I could end up having to pay for that tailing pile. Let's see. Also on page 2, lines 23 to 30, which is the board of directors, and that's already been mentioned, the 7 people. A lot of people who have read this, at least some that have read it, seem to think that this whole list of people mentioned, the Kuskokwim Corporation, Calista, KNA, ABCP, and City of Napakiak, and City of Bethel, Crooked Creek Traditional, will be able to be on the board, but they can just nominate. And it's appointed members of the board shall be officers, directors, or employees of private entities that have a physical presence. Now, only the private entity has to have a physical presence. It could be a board of director from Northland or Crowley or Placer Dome. You know, someone in Australia or Canada could be on that board of directors if their corporation has a presence within the region. Someone from Seattle on Alaska Airlines board could be on there. And here's where I hope you guys will worry, because it could be these people when Governor Murkowski is in. But I hope you'll also worry just as much that if we get a pro-environmental governor, it could be members of the Sierra Corporation, or Sierra Club, or PETA, even worse, that come here and get a job with some, you know, some bed and breakfast. And so I hope you will worry that it's one way for 4 years and a totally opposite way in another 4 years. And you may worry about giving this authority to us local people. You know, we'll fight and some will be pro and some will be anti. But I think we could come up with something down the middle that could make it work, where if it's totally appointed by a governor, it can be swinging from one end to the other, where if you're not connected with the mine, you're totally out of it, and if you're connected with the mine, the next 4 years, you're totally out of it. So I hope you'll worry about that part. Then page 5, lines 1 to 4, and I worry that this big of an area could end up with a what could be looked at as a semi-private police, like the Anchorage Airport Police. You know, it's great if it's the Anchorage Airport, but a police force that is, you know, 20 miles by 200 miles, and none of its bosses are elected or elected by the people within that region, that's kind of scary to me. Maybe they wouldn't form a police department. Maybe it would only be private security guards, which I don't know that that's any better. And I guess since you've asked everyone else about a borough, I might consider a borough in the Cuspuck School District, but not one for the whole region, because this mine may be big, but it's not going to be big enough to pay the borough costs of the whole Calista region. It may be able to support the costs for the Cuspuck School District, which ends at Kalskag. And then, you know, there's going to be ports down here below Kalskag. If power plants and ports down here on this end were enough for a borough, then that should be looked at separately. And I think that's where mine will end. And I don't have anything in writing. I just spoke off the top of my head. I got 3 lines written down here, and that's references to the pages and lines. Thank you.
Yeah, Dario, thank you very much. And what you do have, you can provide us in writing. We'd appreciate it very much. Questions? Senator Terrio?
The concern over the regional waste disposal, it seems like there's a lot of jumping to a conclusion that that would entail everything at the mine site, any kind of potential hazardous substance used at the mine site, the actual tailings piles at the mine site. I don't think that's what the drafter intended, but it perhaps needs to be clarified. When I look at the map and look at the area that's proposed and all the small communities along the river, you know, Sleep Mute, Red Devil, Crooked Creek, Antioch, all those areas, all those communities have some kind of waste disposals. And they're probably all kinds of different levels of sophistication. It seems like if you are concerned about the environment of the watershed, that ideally you would have one, as much as economically possible, you would have one collective regional waste disposal site that would be done in a sensible manner to make sure that pollution from all kinds of different sources, including household waste, is handled appropriately. So is the concern over the regional waste disposal just that it's not defined enough to assure you that it, you're not talking about the tailings pile of the mine? Do you not see any benefit to having a regional waste disposal, maybe regional power generation, things of that nature, where you would get levels of sophistication that are supported by economies of scale that the region currently doesn't have?
I believe there's potential for that there to be a benefit, but without the definition, there's plenty of potential for abuse. And on the other hand, why does something dealing with the development of a mine have to be stuck with something that has nothing to do with the port, and that's the waste of the villages within the region? What I'm thinking is that the idea of the waste there is, if it was limited to, say, where they're developing a port, yes, they handle waste within there, but handling waste for the whole, all of the villages along the way and or every fish camp, and then are they going to start, are you going to, if you have a fish camp, are you going to have to get on the garbage once a week or whatever when the barge goes by, or, you know, are you going to have to pay some authority? You know, a lot of people at their camps, all it is, I mean, they haul out the few cans they have, and they compost most of their waste and feed the rest to the dogs, and some people manage their waste very well. And are they going to have to pay for a regional waste authority? I don't know. I think the mine, maybe this should be more limited to the mine rather than the whole region. There's a lot of questions when you just say waste disposal authority.
Yeah, thank Dario. Senator Huggins here, question for, where do you live?
I live in Bethel.
Yeah, what,
but I do have a house lot at Crooked, or at Georgetown, that I would like to build on. And I also lived in Antioch and McGrath as a child, as well as Anchorage and other places.
Right. So, given some safeguards, and I would, you know, to be quite frank with you, I think most people that have experienced developments in recent times, that there are more safeguards than you and I can imagine. And I don't want to be, I'm not being negative about it. There are just lots of safeguards, and there's lots of money spent on safeguards. And I'm not saying that there aren't some failures of safeguards at times, but I would ask you to take the leap of faith in entering into the proposition of coming to the table and let's work on this together so that we can, in fact, put the plate this and assure you that the safeguards you're asking for are there, and then other things in addition, so that we can get on with the process of bringing some improvements to the community and enhancing overall economically the impact of things like a port authority and a mine.
Well, as long as the port authority is limited to being a tax-exempt process for, say, building courts and roads and that sort of infrastructure, then it has a place, but not when it becomes a de facto borough that's not even elected locally. I don't want to see that, and I don't want to see it as a place to dump or to strand costs of the mine, and then end up stranding us with the costs after the mine.
Okay, Mauro, thank you.
If it's limited to shipping, then great. A port
Authority has a place.
Right. Mara, we thank you very much, and others in Bethel that came forward today and testified. We appreciate your testimony. This is the beginning of the process, not the middle or the end of the process, and we ask you to be stay tuned and please help us be part of the solution so that we can be of assistance to the local community. Are there other questions or Mario or comments on this Senate bill? Okay, Senate Bill 40 will be carried over in committee, and we'll take a 5-minute break. Will you come back to order? As we're looking at Senate Bill 92 / House Bill 115, an act relating to airport customer facility charges, and we're looking at adopting House Bill 115 will be the vehicle used for this legislation unless there's objections to work from the draft version / I for Senate substitute for House Bill 115. Questions, comments on that? Okay, with that, are there no objections? Here are no objections. Josh? There we are. Go ahead, please.
My name is Josh Appleby, and I'm staff representative Tom Anderson, who apologized that he couldn't be here today. I understand that there's been a full hearing on the Senate bill and the adoption of the work draft for Senate CS for CS for House Bill 115 is the same as the Senate bill. So I don't know what you would like from me. I'd be happy to go through a whole presentation again, but.
Yeah, let's give the committee members a couple of minutes here to just take a look and see if there are any questions or comments we make this time, Josh. And if there are any things that based on you being a subject matter expert that you want to highlight for us, that would be appreciated.
I believe we have, Mr. Chairman, online the principals that can answer specific. I know the changes were generated from the Department of Law and Mr. John Steiner, who I believe is online, be able to go through individual word changes that happen in the CS.
Okay, online we have Kip. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
John, you there?
Yes, sir, Chairman, I am.
Okay, Mark?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here as well.
Okay, very good. Just be standing by here. We'll get to you here in a moment.
Okay.
It's Senate Cowder.
Yeah, is there any difference in the two bills, and what are they?
To the Chair, Senator Cowdery, there are no differences in the bills. The bill that you adopted is a work draft in the last meeting where I testified and Mr. Pfeffer testified. Is exactly the same bill now that has been incorporated here.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senatorio.
My apologies. I was not able to attend the last hearing, so I was wondering if you could just have a quick run-through of the bill. I just want to know all the language that's being dropped out in Section 1, which appears on page 2, all the highlighted language there. Are we just moving that section to the new section of the bill? Or just walking through this section.
Yeah, go ahead.
Through the Chair, Senator Terrio. Perhaps Mr. Steiner would be best to answer that. There were no substantive changes to the bill, and what occurred was a rearrangement of particular words, and an effective date was added to the original bill. But I believe that probably Mr. Steiner could speak to that very easily if you would appreciate that, or I can walk through it.
Yeah, if you would. Like, for example, I see uniform customer facility charge, which is on lines 11, 12, and 13 there. It was very, very controversial when it was initially put into place. It's being deleted here, but I'm just not sure. I haven't been able to track. Has it just been moved to a different section?
The chair, Senator, it has been moved just to a different section. The customer facility charge was already in place in statute, and there is a new charge that's added in this bill, which is a maintenance charge, customer facility maintenance charge.
Okay, is that specifically for the car rental space, or that's in addition to the PFC?
Through the chair, Senator, it all deals with the car rental facility, and it's for the maintenance aspect of the facility.
Okay, am I mistaken then? This, what was in existing statute, is that this passenger facility charge that you're able to tack $2 on the first two airports in your departure and the first two airports on your return? That's all allowed by federal law?
Through the chair, Senator, these charges have nothing to do with airline tickets. They all have to do with car rental.
Well, if I might, Cheryl, if either one of you, if you would just characterize chronologically in about 60 seconds or less, legislation that led us to this point, and this charge, and how it's reviewed every year and adopted to a varying amount.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we introduced the House bill earlier this year, and it proceeded through the House, going through the Transportation Committee, and then through the Finance Committee. We made one change in the House Transportation Committee, and that was to add an effective date, because this legislation is time sensitive, and so that effective date happened in House Transportation, where it passed out with four due passes, and then went on to the Finance Committee and passed out, and then passed the House floor unanimously. And there were some minor word changes.
Excuse me a moment, but this is supplementing previous legislation, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, but bring us up to speed in that 60 seconds on previous legislation this is supplementing.
As far as in 2001, I think the best way to sum it up would be to say that in 2001, when the legislature dealt with this issue, it passed Chapter 99 SLA 2001, authorizing the use of these fees, these customer facility charges, to fund the construction of improvements for airport facilities or on state-owned land. And the question was, as far as being able to bond for these projects and then sell these bonds on the open market, there was some language changes that needed to be tightened up, and that's where we brought in this bill, to tighten up this language such that in the marketplace we can go out and sell the bonds that were sold for the construction of these facilities.
That really accomplishes two things: operation and sustainment cost. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. We've added the language in this bill for the customer maintenance charge, which is separate from the facilities charge. Right. And that will keep the maintenance of the facility, not just the construction, but also the maintenance, so that in 30 years, when the bonds are paid off and the ownership reverts back to the state, they'll actually have an asset that's been maintained and is worth something.
It's visualized and anticipated that will be $4 or less over the life of the 30 years bonding. Is that
Mr. Chairman, that is the estimate that's been
per day. Yes.
Is it per day or per transaction?
Through the chair, it's per transaction.
Per transaction. Okay. Now, help us out.
This is Bob Allen, Mr. Chairman. It's per transaction day.
Transaction day. So the number of days you have rented a car each. Yep. Got it. Okay. Senatorial.
Okay. And so this is for the facility right there on the property. If the person wants to avoid the charge, they can go off property and rent a car and not pay the charge.
To the chair, that's my understanding. Yes.
Yeah.
And why all of the car companies that are going to use this facility are in agreement on this charge, correct?
Through the chair, I believe that is correct. We have letters of support in the packet.
Why was it not possible for them just to increase the rates to cover this cost and pay for the cost? Why is it that it takes state action for them to raise the revenue necessary to pay for the bond?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Terrio, I believe that when you're selling bonds for the construction, I believe there needs to be a surety there that those will be repaid continually into the future. And so if you have a company that just raises the rates but then runs into a competitive, you know, market with, you know, several companies, they might have to reduce the rates and make cuts. So there's an uncertainty there. So I think state action would be required to make
stand
sure.
Stand by one. Johnny, Mark, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Did you hear the question?
Yes.
Can either one of you give some clarity to the question?
Yes,
or the answer?
I can. The question was, why can't...
Who's speaking in affiliation?
This is Mark Pfeffer with Venture Development Group. The companies are prohibited from setting charges to do a project of this type on their own because of antitrust laws. What's required is a governmental entity to require that the customer facility charge be collected. Once collected, that charge actually never becomes revenue of the state. It passes from the car rental company and is remitted directly to a bond trustee. But the governmental entity has to be engaged in the requirement that the charge be collected to avoid antitrust rules.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you for your indulgence for me to get up to speed since I missed the initial hearing on this.
Yeah, if I might, you know, we combed through this relatively well with Mr. Pfeffer last time around, and I think when the conversation concluded, we essentially were assured that the character and the good standing of organizations are involved in this, that the airport essentially is supportive, DOT is supportive. Please, anybody speak up if I'm saying something that is not true. And that overall this has been an evolutionary process, and this is the culmination that will allow the project to move forward. Is that accurate? Anybody disagree with that? Okay, so we're at the juncture at this point in time. Mr. Knudsen, do you have anything from a DOT perspective that you would like to add?
No, sir. I believe your committee has asked some very good questions. We have invested a great deal of time in legal counsel and in economic analysis, and feel that this tool will be probably not frequently used, but certainly in the case of the rental car garage, will be a very valuable asset to the users of the airport.
Okay, Mr. Steiner or Mr. Pfeffer, is there anything you would like to add on the bill?
Chairman Huggins, this is John Steiner with the Attorney General's Office. Just, I would clarify, I guess, just two small points. One is that it was suggested that, or asked whether this related only to this rental car facility, and strictly speaking, it is not limited only to the rental car facility, and it could potentially be used for another facility in the future, although only the rental car facility is currently on the table to make use of these provisions. The second point was that I think Mr. Pfeffer stated it accurately, that there is a reason why it's necessary in order for all the rental car companies to charge a uniform charge as opposed to simply absorbing it into their cost structure. The state has to be a state actor for, in large part, federal antitrust reasons, but that's not the sole reason. The other factor is that the state lets rent-a-car concessions to private industry. Those have a certain lifespan, after which time the state goes out for new rental car concessions. Generally speaking, the same entities typically sign up again to continue on, although they may rejuggle their priority a little bit depending on their bidding stature. Because there is a term to those agreements, no existing rental car company would be in a position to promise on the bonds over the 30-year life of the bonds. However, in the marketplace, as we understand it, in a revenue bond marketplace, the bondholders rely on the market for rental cars in general and aren't reliant on which particular rental car companies may be serving that market. Therefore, when the state imposes the consolidated facility charge, it will be charged by whichever rental car companies happen to be operating at the airport at any given time.
Questions for Mr. Steiner? Ms. Stafford, do you have anything that you would like to add from your perspective?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman. I think if you have questions, I can answer them, but I appreciate the work that's been done to date by your committee.
Yeah.
I'll just stand by for questions.
If I might, let me add a couple other comments. Number one is that there is a process for new rental car companies to become part of the vendor process, in this case at Anchorage International Airport. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir, that is.
Right. And to restate what Senator Terrio said previously, that it still allows for competitors downtown not to be subjected to this fee.
Yes, sir, that's accurate.
Mr. Chair, this is John Snyder. I think one of those two points needs to be clarified to some extent. It is certainly accurate that off-airport rental car companies can continue to operate outside of this facility, and passengers can continue to take advantage of them and not pay a charge for this facility. With regard to other companies becoming on-airport rental cars, it is anticipated that the maximum number of on-airport rental car companies that would be allowed would be 8 companies, and that right now we have just recently signed on with the 8th company. So additional companies would not be able to come in unless existing companies were to drop out or to lose in the next round of competitive bidding.
Very good, Mr. Steiner. Thank you. We covered that at our last hearing, but I appreciate your clarifying that number 8. Yeah, Senator Terrio.
So just so I'm clear, if one of my constituents goes to Anchorage, doesn't want to pay for the parking facility, they can hop a cab or the courtesy bus, go to Avis off property, and rent the car there. Is that right?
Yes, Senator, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Committee members, is there anything that you'd like to address in the bill beyond where we are at this point in time?
No, I'm fine if you're ready for a motion.
The chair would entertain a motion.
I move that we move committee substitute for House Bill 150. 115, transportation to the next committee. Fiscal note.
Okay, without objections, HB 115 will be moved. Is there any objections? Okay. HB 115 is moved and this committee is adjourned.